Hi, Janosz.
Hey there. How's it going?
Pretty good. It's yet another virtual conference.
Yet another virtual conference. And you know what? TV's boring.
Exactly. Let's just make our own cinema replays.
Yeah, that's awesome. What could we watch tonight?
I would suggest we make a honeypot online and then check what people are doing on there.
Give me 5 minutes. That'll be fine, right? Yeah, so welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Let's build us a nice little honeypot. A skinema. Right, it's awesome.
We have to just say that this is actually because someone jokingly asked you to include that in containerized SH.
No, actually, they thought it was serious.
Really?
Yeah, this was a serious idea that a skinema should be used for audit logging. And because they thought, like, Askinema, it's nice because you have a web player, you can look at it, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
Let's take a look. So Askinema has a pretty unique feature because normally when you think about, okay, how do I record my console for teaching something, then you go and you make a video, much like this one. And the problem with that is that it's huge, right?
Yeah.
It's like video files can be hundreds of megabytes or gigabytes in size, even for smaller ones. And then when you want to put something on a website, then people have to use a lot of bandwidth. And actually, what you're doing is just presenting a bunch of text. So that's why Askinema was born. It records the text that you're typing with the timing, and then you have a nice little JavaScript web player that can just replay the whole thing.
So what's the size of, let's say, 10 commands? Would it
Ten
just be the
commands.
characters and the timestamp?
Yeah, pretty much. It would just be the characters, the timestamp, and the output. So I'd say an overhead of maybe 20-30%
Okay. Yeah, because of the timestamp.
Because
Okay.
that needs to be stored. We'll take a look in a minute. But yeah, so if you make a GIF or GIF or however you're supposed to pronounce it, I don't
GIF, of
know.
course, just
GIF,
saying.
yeah,
Yeah.
I don't know which one's the politically correct one. Then that's going to be dozens of megabytes, at least even for a short one. So Askinema is really, really great for embedding into websites. So some of the things you can look at is the way you do it is you type this command Askinema rec in your console, and then you just type whatever you want to record. And you can see that we're typing HelloFosdem21 here. And then you press Control D or you type exit, and then that's it. And then you can hit enter to upload it to askinema.org, so you get a link. And you can look at that link. And if you look at the link at the bottom of the screen, that's a shortened version, then you can look at this exact recording. So this is how Askinema works, basically. And of course, it's open source, so you can run your own Askinema server. You don't have to upload it to askinema.org.
That's how a lot of open source projects just use it for their documentation and that type of thing. Can you
Yeah.
embed the player?
Yes, you can. You can embed it into GitHub, etc. So it's really, really easy to make something to showcase your open source project with Askinema. One of the things that I also really liked about it is, as I said, the format is real simple. But of course, when something's really cool, then and people can make crazy things with it, then people will do crazy things with it. So on the Askinema website, there is a deluge of things that you can look at that people have made with Askinema, starting from shell scripts to full-on ASCII games that you can watch with code coloring.
I like the Tetris one.
Oh, there's a Tetris one, there's a tanks one. Just go to askinema.org, take a look at the examples. It's really awesome. So, but
Back to
the,
the honeypot.
back to the honeypot link. How do we get to making a honeypot with Askinema that we can take our bucket of flavored popcorn with honey, of course.
So what did we want to do basically? We have an SSH server and
Yes.
people log into it for various reasons. We have a bunch of use cases we can still discuss, but people log in, and when you have your SSH server, you usually have a different audit logging to
Yes.
record what people are doing.
Exactly. And this is important you want this for a number of reasons. If you're building a honeypot, you of course want to take a look at what your attackers are doing. If you're working in a large enterprise, you want to have an audit trail in case, I don't know, some super secret company stuff leaks. You want to make sure that you know that none of your disgruntled employees on their last day of work took all your sensitive data to the competition, and that's what an audit log is for. And there are a number of ways of doing this. The classic way, we're going to show how the classic way works. And then we're going to take a look at how we did this with our own SSH server.
Mm-hmm.
So when you want to implement Askinema, of course, you can use Askinema Rec, which is one option, or the other thing is you can code it yourself. And the good thing about Askinema is that the format is really, really simple. It is basically a text file, and there are JSON fragments in it. It's not a single JSON file. It's a newline delimited JSON, so that each line has a separate JSON on it. This makes it easy to parse because you don't need to load the whole JSON into memory. You can just load it one line at a time. And this is the header. So you specify version 2. You specify the dimensions of the terminal, some environment variables, and
where's
so on.
Where's the
and
opening
so forth.
Parentheses for this one?
It's right there.
But oh, I see.
Okay. Yes, it's the...
The microphone's in the way. I didn't see the one. Okay, moving on. Let's go on, Oscar.
So this is the first line of the format, and the second line and any subsequent line is basically one JSON array. I've formatted it here for easier reading. And it has three items in it. The first one is the timing. The second one, if it's input or output. Normally, Askinema Rec doesn't record input for security reasons. You don't want to record passwords and stuff, but you can.
But you can.
Yes. And then you have these formatting characters. I highlighted them here. They are special characters that are used to do code coloring. So these are what you would issue when you wanted to print colored segments in your shell script. Then you would use these Unicode 1B, I think that's ASCII 31 or something like that, character to then create a special sequence of characters that makes the next few words colored.
Just as a little security reminder for everyone, this is why you have different passwords on every website and every account you use, because you never know where you're logging in, where your password can be saved.
That too, especially on SSH. And we'll show you, we can record much more.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we implemented this is it's written in Go. So you can go to github.com/containerssh/auditlog and you can take a look at how this is implemented. But again, in any other programming language, it's really simple as well. It's basically a bunch of JSONs. So if you have a text-based application that should record something, then you can use a Askinema for it as long as it's intended for a terminal. That could be a log viewer, you could make a text formatter, whatever, anything that you could view in a terminal, you can record in a Askinema. So how do we put this together with an SSH server? How to make a honeypot out of this? You know, one of the forum posts I found today was about, can we make a fake SSH server? Yeah, there are a bunch of open source projects that are fake SSH servers that make an SSH server that doesn't really run anything. It just simulates an environment. But the problem with those is always that...
But how does it give output?
No, it just sends something into the SSH channel. But the problem with that is it has to simulate basically a shell.
So if you do an LS, it would show you just a random folder structure?
Probably,
depending
on the implementation. But the problem with that is, as you said, it's a random folder structure. So when you want to build a real honeypot, then you have to keep track of which files are where, etc. Mm-hmm. So you, at some point, you end up implementing what you could consider a virtual machine for shell script.
Nice.
And that is inevitably very difficult.
Why? I mean, why would anyone do this?
Well, because of security, right? If you let the attacker run a program on your machine, then you might have a security problem.
But if you make a honeypot just on any machine, why would you put a fake SSH server on it? You don't really care what the attacker does with the machine, unless you connect it with your whole network.
It depends on what you want to do. So it depends on if you want to track exactly what the attacker is doing, or you want to let them do something, but then put it in a network disconnected environment. So it entirely depends what you want to do. If you just want to look at what the attacker is doing, then sure, a fake SSH server is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to make an in-depth analysis, as we are going to see in the talk, attackers upload very sophisticated payloads. That is probably not going to work on a fake SSH server.
Yeah, exactly.
So The initial idea was to use Docker for this. And Docker is a container engine, one of many, I should say. And it lets you run a process in a container. And a container is nothing else but a normal Linux or Windows process that is in some way isolated from the host operating system. So it's not a full virtual machine, but it is a security boundary. So when you want to run a container, an Ubuntu container, you would do it like this. And then you're in a container and you can do stuff inside the container. And when you exit, then it's gone.
I like that. But it's only gone in if container SSH.
Well, yes.
Normally you would have to remove it.
Yeah, if you specify the --- RM flag. So what container SSH does, or what our honeypot should do, is basically the user connects to our fake SSH server, and that SSH server then talks to whatever container backend you pick to run what the attacker wants to run. And that is rather simple, because these container backends provide us with an HTTP API. So it's basically a web API that you can talk to. It doesn't look like a web API, because in Docker and Podman it's a Unix socket, but you can still talk HTTP to it. So let's try and do this from scratch. What you do is you take your normal run-of-the-mill OpenSSH that you have installed on your Linux server, and you enter this little command into the SSHD config. This little command forces any connection that's coming in to run usrbin docker run -ti ubuntu. So whenever somebody connects to your SSH server, they're going to land directly in a container, and they cannot do anything about it. That's really nice. The problem is then when you put in a schema and then it becomes complex. That's one thing. And the other thing is it's really, really easy to make a mistake. Because in shell scripts, there's this thing called shell injection when you're not properly escaping parameters that are coming from the user, etc., etc. It's really easy to make a mistake, and that will mean that the attacker can actually SSH into your host system, which is what you absolutely don't want from a honeypot.
What do you mean making a mistake? Because if the config is done, the config is done.
Yes, but for example, imagine you're putting a variable into this command line. There is a variable which I have not put into the slide deck. It's called SSH original command, which is something that the user sends. And just as you have a security vulnerability in SQL, when you put in data from the user without escaping it properly, the same way you can have a security vulnerability in your shell script, in this case, in this force command, which then causes a command from the user to execute on the host system instead of the container. And you, of course, don't want to run schema inside the container, because then your whole audit log is inside the container. So what you can do instead is you could try container SSH, of course. Container SSH is an open source software under the MIT license. We've written it in a couple of months, and you can find all the details about it on containerssh.io. The way that it works is, as we said previously, the user connects to container SSH, and container SSH, without launching any external programs, talks to a container backend using its API and then launches containers for each connection. What it also does, before letting the user in, it talks to an authentication server. This is a server that you have to provide. We supply a demo authentication server that you can use for a honeypot, but you could, for example, connect this to your corporate user database and then let in users into containers based on your database. The other thing that you can do, using the configuration server, you can dynamically supply what kind of a container to launch for this specific user, or what directory to mount. So for example, each user could see their own home directory, and so on and so forth. And this is something that you can dynamically supply using a webhook. Now, the container ssh.yaml is quite extensive, so you can do a lot with it. But for our purposes, we want to watch our users fail at breaking out of a container. So we put in the audit log configuration and set it to log in the schema format into the TMP directory. And this is on the machine that container SSH is running on. So this is the TMP directory is meant on the host machine. This is a new feature in container SSH 0.4. So if you want to try this at the time of recording, you will have to try one of the preview releases. And then you specify the host key. This can be the same host key that you're using for your normal SSH server. And you specify the URL to your authentication server.
So you don't have to obviously code. I mean, the idea is that everyone can plug in their own configuration and authentication server, but we also provide a default one that you can use to test things out.
Yes. So this default one lets you in with a preset username and password, or if you provide it with a specified environment variable, then it lets everybody in. So if you need to generate a host key that you don't want to use your default one, you can do that with this command. And then you can use, for example, Docker to run container SSH itself, but it runs just as well outside of Docker. You can even run it on Windows if you want, or on macOS. And then you specify these parameters. These are just basically a bunch of folders that we used in our honeypot example. And the second command is going to launch the test auth config server. And pay attention to the container SSH allow all variable. This variable lets everybody in. So this is the configuration for a honeypot, where it just accepts any username and any password. And that's how you build a honeypot, basically. And then container SSH is going to log to wherever you specified in your log, but recommend setting it to whatever folder you mounted in your Docker run.
So anyone who's trying to break in can do whatever they like, as long as it's within the container?
Yes.
Because they cannot break out.
Yes, and then you can, of course, configure the container backend to run, for example, in a network disconnected environment. So the authentication server, just in case you want to write your own, is very simple. Container SSH will talk to the / password URL on your server. Then it will send a JSON with the username, the password base64 encoded, the IP address of the connecting user, and a connection ID. This connection ID can then be used. This is recorded in the audit log as well, so you can then match it up with the logs of your authentication server. And what you need to send back is very complicated. It's a JSON with a success true in it to let the user in, or a success false to not let the user in. So if you have a little bit of scripting knowledge in Python or Go, etc., then you can easily write a web server that just does this for you.
And we provide the documentation for it as well.
Yes, we do. And an open API doc. Now, what can you do? How does this look like? You can see that this is an Askinema recording of me typing in a container SSH session. And I inserted this here as a video, and this is how it looks like when you record in Askinema. However, we put this into production, we put it out on the internet, and this is what happened. And I was confused. What the hell is going on here? Even stranger. And it turned out that most attackers are bots. And bots, they don't use consoles. So they can't. Askinema is meant for humans. It's meant for an interactive console where somebody's actually typing and you can record the input, the output, and it looks like a normal console. So this is why Askinema didn't even make it in the first version when I thought about audit logging, because I soon realized, okay, this is not going to record nearly enough information for me to see what's going on.
It would be useful for when you know you have a lot of human.
Yes. For humans, it's good, but not for someone who is malicious, who's running scripts and bots and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the other log format is a binary log format that records much more information. And you can see we changed the format to binary. And this binary format records everything. Otherwise, the config file is the same. And when we decode the binary audit logs, it's recorded in a compressed format, but when we decode it, it looks like this. And this looks really confusing at first, because there's a lot of information which is very specific to how SSH works. But let's take a look at a bunch of examples that we found. So for example, here, an attacker tried to execute a program, and they submit a program execution, so they don't open an interactive shell. Instead, they just tell SSH, run this program, give me back the output, and that's it. And that's what you saw in the previous Askinema recording. So that's a rather simple program execution, but you can already see that the attackers are trying to get information about what they're running on so that they can tailor the output to it. We also found that a lot of the So half of the attackers didn't do anything. They just checked the password, logged out, and that's it. The other half did things that we did not expect. So for example, they uploaded payloads using SFTP. So SFTP is a file transfer protocol over SSH. And they just uploaded their payloads and then extracted it and ran it, and even they deleted their tracks. So this is why a schema is also not useful, because a schema cannot record the SFTP transaction where you could potentially capture the payload even if it's being later deleted.
But the binary one can.
The binary one can. You can decode the SFTP and extract what they uploaded. And the last one that I found really interesting is it's looking for GSM devices. It's looking for mobile phones that are connected directly to a computer. And if you haven't worked in traditional IT ops, or you've never worked in a data center, you might think, okay, why would you do this? Why would you connect a mobile phone to something that's running an SSH server? And the answer is that many sysadmins used to and still do use mobile phones or GSM devices to send alert messages. And that's meant as an out-of-bound communication channel. If the internet is gone, everything is gone, the mobile channel is probably still going to work, so the alerting system can still send a text message to the sysadmin saying, hey, your system's completely down, you need to go check it. And what they probably want to do is send spam text messages from your monitoring mobile phone number. And if you're not the person responsible for the bill, you won't even notice it. So,
even if you do notice it, what can you do about it?
Well, you have to reinstall the whole server because somebody gained access to your server on SSH.
And you'll still
level.
Have to pay your phone bill.
Yes, you still have to pay your phone bill. So SSH attacks used to be different. They used to be, oh yeah, somebody's going to come in, they're going to run a Perl script and that kind of stuff. But since now we have, in many programming languages, we have SSH libraries, we have SFTP servers everywhere available, which it used to be not the case. So you SSH'd into a server and SFTP was not necessarily available 10 or 15 years ago. Now it is. So these attacks have become very sophisticated. They do one connection, so your rate limit is not even going to hit. And in that one connection, they open multiple channels to upload and execute their payload. And so a couple of recommendations. Of course, change your SSH port. One of the things we found is that once you change your SSH port, you have almost zero attacks coming in. Most, like 99% of the attacks are going to come to port 22.
I remember first reading that on the Linode library 15 years ago, I think. Change your SSH port. It's been
one of the
number one recommendations.
It still is. Yep. Many people leave it on 22 because, oh, nothing can happen. The problem is that when it happens, it really does. And I saw one of these cases when somebody just used the default username and password, and then the attackers were in within 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So use SSH keys. Disable passwords completely if you can. Mm-hmm. Because if the attackers are trying to guess passwords, if they can't do that, they can't get in. Use strong keys. If you're using SSH keys, why not use strong ones? It does not cost a lot. And of course, avoid the common usernames, because if you have a username test and a password test, then people are going to get in. These are dictionary attacks. So these are attacks from leaks from other systems. These are attacks for common words, dictionary words, etc. So anything that you see is probably going to be along those lines. And very, very, very few system administrators actually have to deal with non-dictionary targeted attacks. When you're storing SSH keys, you really want to use passwords for those SSH keys, because if a targeted attack happens, it's probably going to go over a developer laptop and they're going to look for weak points there, because developer laptops often have elevated privileges, they have direct access to production systems or system administrators, they're not excluded from this. And if the SSH key is there unencrypted, then an attacker has free rein over your servers.
Those are traditional and still valid SSH tips.
They still happen every day. I've seen many, many SSH attacks, unfortunately, and had to scrape together the ruins of the SSH server afterwards. So what can you do with this? Container SSH is not just a honeypot. one of the original stories, why this was even built, and originally it wasn't even built in Go, it was built in Java using the Apache Mina library, is web hosting. It's the same story. User wants to log in, they want to access their files, and in web hosting, a very traditional problem is that you want to copy data from site A to site B. You're the owner of both, but you have separate logins, so you need to do the whole SFTP over, and then you can't connect out, etc. Containerized SSH solutions like Container SSH allow you to fine-tune the permission matrix, because you're just mounting the websites, the folders of these websites in, depending on which websites the user has access to, and that's how you access them. You don't need to deal with traditional Linux permissions if you want to do that. The other thing is, of course, education. Because when you let a student in, they're going to do something, and traditional learning systems often have a lot of leftover files after exercises and stuff like that. With containerization, the good thing is, once the user disconnects, the container is gone. So that's how you can use this for teaching people Linux. Or now with Kubernetes in Docker, you could even launch full Kubernetes environments for people to learn on. So the last one that we've seen is a high security environment. And this is where the traditional audit log comes into play. We've actually seen companies use this. And the one of the abilities that we are developing into Container SSH is the ability to upload the audit logs directly onto an object storage. So you can plug in any S3 compatible object storage to store your logs so they don't live on the server where Container SSH is running. A couple of ideas. So this is from our preliminary roadmap. We are, at the time of recording, almost done with the 0.4 release.
And as we mentioned, it's on ContainerSSH.io.
Yes, you can go to ContainerSSH.io to look at the roadmap.
These are just screenshots from the website.
Yes. And there are a couple of ideas that we want to do. ContainerSSH is primarily intended as an SSH server that talks to containers, but many people have asked, after seeing what the audit log does, to allow proxying through to real SSH servers, to just use the audit log feature and otherwise just send data to another SSH server. And that's something that we are considering. Or the other idea is to make a web-based client for this, especially for corporate users who are usually having a hard time getting SSH access to a server. You could use a web interface to get a shell and work on that shell. So these are a couple of ideas to stay tuned for. And if you're interested in how this whole thing's going along and what we're doing, you can take a look at containerssh.io or
debugged it.
You can take a look at our website debugged.it. And with that, we are very
ready
happy.
For questions.
We're ready for questions, and we are really happy to have some questions from you.
Maybe you also have ideas about how else this could be used. Maybe you've already thought about it, implemented something similar, so it would be really nice to hear about that.
Yes, let us know and get in touch with us too.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attention. Bye.